Coffee House Shots is sponsored by EDF, Britain's biggest generator of zero carbon electricity. Find out how we are busy helping Britain achieve net zero at www.edfenergy.com.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman and James Forsyth, and it is back to school for MPs. MPs have returned to Parliament today for the new term and Boris Johnson's in-tray is rather full. James, the story that has been leading the newspapers over the weekend relates to social care and how the Prime Minister plans to fund this plan. And we're hearing the announcement is still likely Tuesday, but there's some wrangling going on. Can you explain?
Well, the first in-person cabinet meeting is Tuesday, and given the level of cabinet disquiet about this policy, they obviously need to get... I mean, I don't think cabinet are going to get the chance to kind of bin the policy. We are, these days, we are a long way from that kind of cabinet government and have been for some time. But what I think is true is that you don't want to have a cabinet meeting and then so obviously announce a policy straight afterwards that the meeting is a pure rubber stamp. That's one of the things that most infuriates ministers. I think the difficulty for the Tory party is that two manifesto commitments and a pledge Boris Johnson made when he first went into Downing Street as Prime Minister are all in direct conflict with each other. The Prime Minister said, promised to fix social care. The Tories have promised that people wouldn't have to sell their houses to pay for care. That's in the manifesto. But the manifesto also promised not to raise people's taxes. The problem is you cannot come up with a solution which means that people don't have to sell their houses to pay for their care without raising taxes. So, you know, choose your poison. And Boris Johnson has decided that fixing social care is more important than his pledge not to raise taxes. This has sparked a huge reaction in the Tory party because the Tory party is essentially doing something that New Labour did. They are basically saying we're going to increase national insurance to put more money into health and social care. And so that is where the argument is. There was a moment yesterday on the radio when Nadeem Zahawi, the vaccines minister, was asked if the Tories were still a party of low taxes. And he replied that they were the party of fair taxes, which sounds far more kind of social democrat than Thatcherite. And so I think that you are going to see this tension. You're going to see lots of Tory MPs kicking off about this proposal. And I think it's a moment where the fact that MPs are physically back in Westminster is going to make a difference, because I think it will mean that unease about the policy will spread more quickly than it would have done in the days of the virtual parliament.
Isabel, do you think a party of fair tax is going to win at least some fans in the Tory party?
Well, I mean, there are MPs who've been arguing for quite a while, Jeremy Hunt included, although he's not in favour of this existing plan. But his argument has long been that Conservative voters would be happy to pay more tax if it meant security for the NHS, security for their old age, confidence that they are going to have a good quality of care in old age. As Kate has pointed out in the latest Spectator, actually the funding reforms that are on the table at the moment won't improve the quality of care. But there is some evidence, some polling that suggests that voters actually prefer a national insurance hike to an income tax hike. And the reason for that is that voters do tend to see national insurance as being a pot of money that's for the NHS and for welfare rather than just being an additional tax. So it's not a correct assumption, but it's quite a helpful assumption in this case. The problem is, as James has pointed out, you're going to have a lot of Conservative MPs who are very unhappy with this, not just because they're breaking a manifesto promise not to raise taxes, which is a big deal in and of itself and is something that voters do tend to punish parties quite severely for. If you think back to the Lib Dems and tuition fees, the fury that they unleashed by abandoning their pledge, which was actually to scrap tuition fees, and turning it entirely against that pledge and putting them up instead. In Westminster, we had actually forgotten how serious the backlash against that policy was by the time it came to the 2015 election. And we were surprised that voters were still naming it as one of the reasons why they turned against the Lib Dems in that election and why that party lost so many seats. So it may well be that in the coming months after this policy is actually announced, that there is a backlash that then appears to die away, but that some voters will continue to be angry about it when we get to the next election.
And James, you mentioned the cabinet. There's been many briefings in recent days from cabinet ministers about how angry and unsupportive they are of this policy. But so far, they're rather anonymous briefings. And we have thrown into the mix the fact that, once again, rumours of a reshuffle are circulating, the idea that it could be on Thursday. And this could mean that while some ministers may feel very strongly, apparently, about national insurance going up, they might not feel so strongly as to say something days before they could be demoted. So is that going to impact things?
I think the timing of this reshuffle, or the suggested timing of this reshuffle, isn't exactly subtle. I think that you've got two things going on here with the cabinet. One is the cabinet got very, very resentful during COVID, that huge numbers of decisions were taken without most of them being involved. The argument there was that speed of a situation necessitated that approach. I think the anger here is that this debate has clearly been going on between Number 10, the Treasury, and the Department of Health and Social Care and the NHS for months, and yet the cabinet have not been brought into those discussions, you know, even. And it obviously would be such a totemic moment for the Tory party to say, we are going to raise taxes to put more money into public services, that, you know, that there is an anger about the lack of discussion there. I think it also raises another interesting thing about British politics at the moment. You know, why are the Tory party ahead in the polls at the moment so consistently and so steadily? One of the reasons is that they have no party to their right. You know, there is, you know, I think the Reform Party is ticking along at the low, the Richard Tice, you know, the former UKIP Brexit Party vehicle, is ticking along in the low single digits. But without Nigel Farage, it can't get traction. I think the question is whether going down the policy of raising taxes in contravention of manifesto promise creates space for a kind of low tax party on the right, which, even if it got to kind of 6-7% in the polls, that might take away that Tory lead and make the electoral landscape look very different. Because, you know, obviously one of the problems that Labour have is you have, you know, the Greens on, I think, 9% in the latest poll, and that, which is obviously eating into some of their support.
And Isabel, James's point there about how there is no party on the right, the Conservative Party, does raise questions in the sense that there is clearly nerves about the idea that Boris Johnson may be abandoning the party's reputation for low tax. But can Keir Starmer really gain from that? We know from what we've heard overnight that the Labour leader plans to oppose what's being reported in the papers. So how is that shaping up in terms of an opposition position?
Yeah, so Labour's position at the moment is not unusually slightly confusing. So they may well back a capital gains tax rise instead. So sort of, you know, a tax that they can more clearly link to taxing wealth rather than taxing young people to pay for the care of old people. And that's something that that certain figures have been sort of hammering quite hard over the weekend. But there's also awkwardness over what the party's own policy to reform social care is. And I think we saw that this morning with Liz Kendall doing the broadcast round, that she, despite being someone who genuinely is very well versed in the technicalities of social care, has been slightly hamstrung by her party not really doing any policy development at this stage, and therefore not being able to offer a clear alternative plan for social care herself. I noticed that John Ashworth, the Shadow Health Secretary, is launching an NHS rescue plan, which is something that will chime with a lot of people, given that the NHS is having a summer crisis at the moment rather than a winter crisis. And we see that Boris Johnson will be announcing £5.5 billion extra for the health service to try to clear the backlogs. But I think Labour is still in that position that it has been on so many different issues, where it appears to be coming quite late to this debate, jumping on, I suppose some people might say, that the bandwagon at the last minute, despite, strangely, on this particular issue, the considerable expertise of its front benches.
And finally, James, there are many challenges Boris Johnson is going to face in the coming weeks. But on COVID, we're hearing again that the Prime Minister does plan to stick with his previous comments talking about vaccine passports. Now, when the government's talking about vaccine passports previously, a lot of ministers and MPs took it to be more of a stick and carrot approach to incentivise people to get the vaccine, and they might not actually bring in vaccine passports. But on nightclubs, it looks like they are coming.
Ministers used to suggest this was a way of driving vaccine uptake among young people. Or they would suggest, look, we're not going to stop places from doing it that want to do it. If the government chooses to mandate it itself, it is going to run into a kind of set of Tory libertarian opposition that will be quite determined. To link back to our previous conversation, a lot of the people annoyed by that will be the more small state, low tax Tories as well. So it will compound anger on that part of the party. But I think, again, this and the policy on raising national insurance, put more money into health and social care, reflects another Tory worry, which is what is, you know, the one of the big dangers for the Tories is that in the next election, Labour can say, you can't trust the Tories with the NHS. Just look at how long these waiting lists are. Look at how they haven't been cleared post-COVID. That's one of the reasons why the government is so keen to put more money into the NHS to try and clear those backlogs. And then on vaccine passports, they also have this view that, you know, if you're still losing a sizable number of beds all the time to COVID, clearing these backlogs will become more and more difficult. And I think what we wait to see now is how big this September spike is. You know, Scotland had a big spike in cases when schools returned. Are we going to see the same in England in the coming days? Or is the argument that Philip Thomas has made in The Spectator, which is perhaps one of the reasons why the wave that was going on at the time that the full unlocking took place wound down more quickly, is that there is more acquired immunity among the young population, the school age population, than had been previously thought.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Isabel. And thank you for listening.